Now, can you remind me what I pay you people for? Honestly, throw me a bone here.
TGIF, everybody. Hi, I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
Welcome to Mance and Mitchell on a Friday. We hope that your weekend is about to skyrocket into all kinds of unforeseen fun. We always like to make room for joyous surprises around here. And I think we have a little bit of one today in terms of our guest and the worth and the wealth of information provided in a wonderful new book that we are going to have our guest tell you all about. But before we do that, we need to say hello to bad boy Benny Mathers at the board. How you doing, Benny?
I'm doing well. You too. And it's a pleasure to have you back for another Friday. Fantastic Friday. And yay, we got a win. We needed a win yesterday at the Hawks. Yep. So we're looking good.
Well, hi. It was a nice bounce back. I mean, for crying out loud, hold a lead in the fourth quarter, will
you? Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I coincidentally or not, we won by 17 this time. And yet last week's game, last Sunday, I should say, we blew 17 points. But it happens. It's early.
Oh, sure. There are adjustments to be made, no doubt about it.
Yep.
So, fine win for the Seahawks last night.
Uh-huh.
Being on the East Coast, Sarasota, Florida is where Suzanne and I call home. We weren't able to stay up. I mean, we could have, but
you needed your beauty sleep, you know, your beauty sleep. Yeah.
And then there's getting ready for this program.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, we need a lot of beauty sleep over here. Lots.
We're delighted to be able to welcome a first-time guest. We love our first-timers, Suzanne.
We do.
And we kind of beat the bushes. We want to find people who really know how to bring it, who have something to offer, because we're not about idle chit-chat on this program, unlike what you're hearing at this second. We actually believe in the worth of what product we provide on this show. It's about not just, you know, UFOs, ghosts, haunted houses, and the like. No. We believe in the principle of prosperity. We believe in the greater and higher harmony of the universe. We also believe that the great thing about money is having some. And the lady we're going to interview for the balance of this hour knows plenty about that firsthand. Her name is Mae McCarthy, and she deserves some mad props. Suzanne, why don't you do the honors?
Mae McCarthy has spent 32 years uncovering the mystery of how to rely on intuition to experience great levels of success, financial abundance, and freedom. She is a successful serial entrepreneur, CEO, angel investor, philanthropist, speaker, and author who has grown 6 profitable companies to as large as 250 employees and over $100 million in annual revenues. She serves on business, philanthropic, arts, and university boards and is the author of the best-selling book, The Path to Wealth. Her website, maemccarthy.com. Welcome to Mance and Mitchell. Mae McCarthy, how are you today?
Oh, I am just great. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, we are thrilled. And 2 days ago, Gary and I finished the last word of The Path to Wealth, but I didn't wait till we finished the last word before I started working on the 7 steps. I have to tell you that, Mae, I'm already into it.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. How's it going?
So far, so good. For the first week, I can already point to some positive results about that, and eager to share that with our listeners today. Your book is called The Path to Wealth, 7 Spiritual Steps for Financial Abundance. But what I wanted to ask you just at the outset is, you're not new to this game. And reading your book, I found that you started your first company at a very early age. And I wanted you to tell our listeners about that.
Oh, sure. Well, my very first company, I started when I was 6. I'm the last of 10 children raised on the beach in Hawaii. And my parents were great symbols of service. My dad was a surgeon and my mom was a nurse, but she volunteered for everything, including, of course, taking care of 10 kids. But what I saw in them was this idea that you can't outgive this universal supply. And just a couple of examples, my father, being a surgeon, really wanted to have health care provided on our side of the island. And, you know, this is the 60s and we didn't have a hospital or a group of physicians that people could go to reliably. They were just a scattering. So he built some medical office buildings and enabled doctors that wanted to come practice on our side of the island to have free rent until they could build up their practice, and he actively worked to help them. He also, when he'd have patients that couldn't afford to pay him money, he would look them in the eye and remind them that they are incredibly valuable and that there's something that they do, something that they offer, something that is uniquely their talent that they will think about sometime in the future to be able to create this fair exchange of value with him. But he was going to go ahead and take care of them right there and then, and somehow, some way, they would be able to provide whatever it was that they seemed deemed as valuable later on. And I tell you, at the end of every year, we had more fresh food, more fresh fish, vegetables, clothing, entertainment, all sorts of stuff that exceeded what my dad would have made if they would have just given him money. And he taught all of us kids that. So at 6 years old, I saw a whole group of people out on our beach. It was a private beach, so there weren't any facilities like bathrooms or water fountains or anything. And I saw them, and I thought, they must be thirsty. So I asked my mom if she would help me to create a concession business so that I could serve these people out on the beach. And she did. She taught me all about cost of goods sold and how to price something so that I made a profit. And then, of course, later with six older brothers, she also taught me about the importance of understanding inventory shrinkage as they ate a lot of my profits.
You know, I'm happy to hear that story, May. I'm acquainted with your family through a church connection going back years, and I have seen you at Center for Spiritual Living Seattle, my former spiritual home, and it's always going to have a place in my heart, even though I'm 3,000 miles away. You and I would smile in each other's direction. I would say we had a nodding acquaintance, and I knew the connection that you had with your family, which constituted one of the pillars of our church, I must say. But I never really got to talk to you about the principles that drive your thinking. That's why I'm very grateful that you put out this book, The Path to Wealth, 7 Spiritual Steps for Financial Abundance. And you know, May, I notice when I look at the title here and I see your name right at the top, it says May McCarthy. It does not say May McCarthy Rockefeller. So even though you're the daughter of a surgeon and a nurse, on the beach in Hawaii there, you got to learn this from people who made it happen organically rather than being, as the saying goes, a trust fund baby.
Right, right. No, my dad died at six when I was 16 years old, and I got it into my mind that, you know, we should all pull together. So I was not very popular with my brothers because I insisted at that period of time. I had a little part-time job at a fast food place, and all my brothers had jobs as well at gas stations and things like that. And I insisted that we all start paying rent to my mother since my dad had passed away. And they weren't very happy about that, but I just felt like we need to give. We need to help. And consequently, all of us have been blessed immensely. There's 8 of us out of 10 that have our own businesses and are in some form of service. And you just can't outgive this abundant universe. If you give, you can't help but receive back. It works that way.
It's interesting that you say that, May, about paying your mom, because we never thought ourselves of doing that. However, as each of my mother's 3 children graduated school and began their careers and their lives, for the period of time they were living at home, she insisted they pay rent. And it was very interesting how all 3 of us really resisted that. We had been given our free rent all our lives. All of a sudden we were being asked to pay something, and it was nominal. It didn't even cover the costs, but just the idea of making the transition and being responsible and knowing that life is not a free ride, that, you know, there are costs in the world to living. It was tough to turn that over to her, but I think it benefited us eventually in learning a bigger lesson.
Yeah, Yeah, I it was invaluable to me. I don't know where I got that thought about why it would be important for us to contribute. But again, I have to believe that it's from that really, really wonderful spiritual law that I saw in action and have proved over and over and over again, and that is the law of giving and receiving. I mean, if you give, it does come back. And often, depending upon, you know, how cheerful your heart is, when you're giving with a cheerful heart, it seems to come back in an even greater quantity. It's amazing. I love proving that.
When you were 19 years of age, it seems, May, that you started a business in a way where you had to come to terms with the not only the underpinnings of business on a practical basis, but you had a golden opportunity to apply some principles that would stand you in good stead all the way to the present day. Why don't you tell us a bit about that?
Oh, sure. When I was 19, it was the summer before my sophomore year in college, and since you're familiar with CSL Seattle, you probably know my sister, Reverend Sharon Ramey.
But of course.
Okay. So Sharon had this great idea for a business and asked me if I would, you know, come and join her. So I did. And we grew a fashion show retail business to about 60 shows a week in the Seattle, greater Seattle and Portland area, and sold franchises to Alaska and New Jersey locations. And so what I learned a lot was how I could partner with spirit to achieve what I wanted. And not only did I prove that I could achieve the goals that I wanted that were healthy, I also proved that I would achieve the things that I didn't want if I put too much attention. A great example of that is I had this one model, this one sales model, and she was very, very good at sales. But she would use some tactics that would upset some of the other sales models. And I remember being, after hearing so many complaints about her, feeling really discouraged. And although I wanted to have the success be realized by my company, because she was a very good salesperson, I didn't like the part where all the other sales models would be upset. So I used to actually pray the problem. And the problem was, oh, please don't let this sales model be such a challenge for me. Please don't let her do something that upsets people tonight. And every time I'd pray that problem and use those kinds of words, I got more of what I didn't want. And that was sort of a light bulb that came on and said, wait a minute, perhaps I could change that. Perhaps I could focus more on what I want. So I started saying some things like, only those salespeople that are for our company's highest and best good work for us now, and all others find their good elsewhere. And I started focusing on that and focusing on her being extremely happy. And it was a very short time later that she notified me that she got a better job offer and was quitting. And we got we attracted a lot of really top-notch salespeople after that, but in a really healthy way. So there's something to partnering with this source of intuition, with this all-knowing power in the universe that can benefit us. But part of it is that we have to really be clear on what our goals are, what the realized, actual, achieved goal looks like, and focus on that.
It seems to me that early on you understood, May, where to put God in the org chart.
Yes. Well, after that business, I had five others. And actually, I'm on my seventh one right now. But the what I realized was that I could bring this characteristic of spirit that guided and directed me through intuition and other unseen signs. I could bring that advisor, that characteristic of spirit, into my business. And so, being a CEO, I generally surround myself with people whose advice I value. So I have the chief financial officer that ends up guiding our company in terms of finances, a chief information officer that guides us regarding technology for our products and our company, and chief operations officer. Well, I decided to give a name to that characteristic of spirit that guides and directs me towards my goals. through intuition and other people and signs and gut instincts and things like that. And I gave it a name, which is the chief spiritual officer, and actually put it at the top of my org chart. So all of my employees would ask me, who's the CSO? You know, do we get to meet that person? How do we, who is that? And when we sold our last company, and they, the company that bought us, which was a $5.5 billion company, they took a look at our org chart and said, CSO? Who's the CSO? And I had to explain. And they thought it was, you know, interesting. They'd never seen that before. But it really did turn our company into a miracle-making machine. And, in fact, we would have things happen for our benefit based on our goals so often that miracles really just turned into typicals for us.
Well, I'm prepared to believe it based on reading your book. I want to get the title out there several times during this hour. Mae McCarthy is the author of The Path to Wealth, Seven Spiritual Steps for Financial Abundance. I'll tell you, Mae, with so many books out there that talk about sharks in the water, you swim with the sharks, watch out, here comes a shark, you can outswim the sharks, and all of these hardcore business principles, which no doubt have their value, it's wonderful to see books on the open market about how spirituality can unabashedly be incorporated into the life of a big business.
Yeah, I feel very strongly about that, and I brought that principle into my business deliberately, with intention, and I wanted to have it show up so that all of our employees who were from lots of different faith backgrounds, different gender, different races, different age groups, and I wanted them to be able to recognize that there was this unseen advisor that could help us, but not choose a traditional religious term for it. And nobody felt offended by that term, chief spiritual officer. They knew that it was a guiding principle that would help us and give us intelligence and insight into achieving our goals. The other thing that we did that was kind of unique was I gave everybody the same job. Everyone in our company had the same job, but they had different skill sets. And it was printed on business cards for them to remember. And it was really funny. I was telling this story at a Women in Leadership panel last night where we were in a very, very large meeting with a giant health system, and I had a software developer there that was the senior lead, and I had a interface engineer specialist and salespeople and whatnot, and we're in this big meeting, and it's not uncommon for the person in charge from the customer side to ask everybody to introduce themselves and what they do for the company. So it's going around, and it gets to my senior software design engineer, and he says, well, sir, do you want my job or do you want my skill set? And the customer looked at him and said, what's the difference? And he says, well, everybody in our company has the same job, but we all have different skill sets. And the customer sat back and smiled and said, well, tell me both of them. So he said, well, my job is to work towards the success of my coworkers, my customers, my suppliers and vendors, and our world. But my skill set is that I'm the senior software design engineer here to help you create a solution for your needs. And then it went to the next employee that works for us, and he said, well, I have the same job, but my skill set is that I'm a systems interface engineer. And around the table it went. And when it got to me, I said, I have the same job, but I'm here as support for the rest of the facts team. And at the end of the meeting, one of the customer representatives came up to me, and he introduced himself as the chief financial officer for this large health system. And he said, you know, what you did was really brilliant. First of all, it told us that your job, everybody's job, is to work towards our success. And we've never had a vendor tell us that before. The second thing is, because you didn't identify yourself as the CEO, it allowed my team and your team to speak freely. Because often if a CEO is in the room, then people start directing questions and comments towards them, and they're much more reserved. So So you allowed this creative process to happen simply by being there as support for your team. And I thought, well, that was a great, you know, that turned out even better than I thought. I mean, that wasn't my intention to get that feedback, but it was my intention to make sure that everyone in our company knew that we were to serve. And if we did, we would always be blessed with even greater success, which is exactly what happened.
We are talking with Mae McCarthy, author of The Path to Wealth, Seven Spiritual Steps for Financial Abundance. We're going to go ahead and take our first break of this hour. And when we come back, we're going to ask about what are the responsibilities of the chief spiritual officer and what are the responsibilities of the other people. So stay tuned. You're listening to Manson Mitchell on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Preceding audio was via a Skype call.
Hi, this is Susan Harmon, inviting you to join me every Friday, noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time, for the Susan Harmon Hour. I'm always curious and I enjoy discussing a wide array of interesting and provocative subjects with fascinating and erudite guests. If you're looking for grounded authenticity with a twist, you'll want to join us for a fast-moving and informative hour right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and there's good news. Deaths from this disease continue to decline. As more women get regular cancer screenings, the disease can be detected at its earliest and most treatable stages. Women over 40 should schedule their annual mammograms today. And if you're a woman of any age and are at high risk, talk to your doctor about annual mammograms. Find easy-to-understand information at radiologyinfo.org. That's radiologyinfo.org.
Staying connected with Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell is easy. Just go to manceandmitchell.com for the latest info on topics and guests. Sign up for early notice about future shows on a spam-free listserv. Friend Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell on their Facebook pages and like the Manson Mitchell Show page at facebook.com/Mance and Mitchell. If you're on Twitter, share a follow with Gary and Suzanne at Mance Mitchell. Join Gary and Suzanne Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. for an unusual show that covers everything from personal growth to the paranormal.
Here's an amazing act. Here's a tremendous act. Here's a startling act. The amazing, the thrilling, the greatest, spectacular, incredible, exciting, wonderful, world fame, most unusual novelty act.
The home of the A-Team of Alternative Talk is manceandmitchell.com. Heard right here on Alternative Talk 1150 AM or streaming live from your computer anywhere.
Hello, my name is Marie Manucherry. I'm an energy intuitive author and host of Where Energy and Medicine Meet. During the show, I answer callers' questions, intuitively, of course, and provide invaluable guidance. I also interview others who I believe are on the leading edge of thought. Tune in on Thursday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on 1150 a.m. in Seattle or live wherever you are at energyintuitive.com.
On the AM band at 1150 and on the FM HD band at 98.9 HD3, Alternative Talk 1150.
The following audio is via a Skype call.
Welcome back to Manson Mitchell and our interview with Mae McCarthy, author of The Path to Wealth, Seven Spiritual Steps for Financial Abundance. Mae, we want to take a moment here to send out our regards and give a shout out to a wonderful young woman who was very instrumental in bringing you to our attention and onto our show. Of course, I'm talking about your assistant, Jenny Martin.
Yay! We love Jenny.
Yes, we do love Jenny.
The idea for this interview happened a while back, I have to admit, and it was hatched at a steakhouse in Orlando.
Yes, that's the last time we saw Jenny in person.
She came for a seminar, a professional seminar. We said, hey, let's get together. We drove up to Orlando. We sat down to dinner with her, and she started pitching us hard, Mae.
Oh.
Harder than she needed to. We were sold. As soon as she mentioned your name in the CSL connection, she had us. But she thought it would be really good for you to come on the show. And, of course, the book was in the process, you know, and when the timing was right, here you are. But thanks to Jenny for that. She really helped out a lot.
Oh, I just love her. She's actually beginning. She got together with a small group of people, and they're starting a conscious capitalism chapter here in Seattle.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just think it's brilliant. I'm really happy for her.
So I guess there needs to be just a few seconds at least of definition. Conscious capitalism as opposed to unconscious capitalism, what does that entail?
Well, it's kind of similar to what the job description I gave to all of my employees. But there's a book out that was written by one of the co-founders of Whole Foods and a university professor talking about how you can, in a company, be a conscious capitalist, and you can work towards what they call stakeholders' benefit, and that would be coworkers, customers, suppliers, and vendors in our world. And I didn't even know that we were practicing what they term as conscious capitalism until I read the book years later. But yeah, so that idea of having a bigger purpose than just profits, and taking care of all of your stakeholders is the premise of being a conscious capitalist company.
Very good. Very good. We were talking earlier about the org chart, and at the top of the org chart is the chief spiritual officer, abbreviated CSO. And there's distinct responsibilities. In reading your book, you say that, you know, when you begin these seven spiritual steps, you really get a deeper understanding of what's your responsibility and what is the CSO's responsibility. And they're very separate in the partnership. Since this is an important point, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what you do and what the CSO does.
Sure. So the CSO, like I said, is my name for that characteristic of spirit or this all-knowing universal intelligence and power. It's that characteristic that guides and directs me towards my goals. So in this partnership, which everyone can establish, the first thing you would do is name the CSO in whatever word or name that characteristic of spirit should have, so that you will value the advice that you receive. So I have some people in my workshops that will call it spirit, God, Holy Spirit, infinite intelligence, divine mind. I have some that call it Fred, some that call it Martha. I mean, whatever name indicates and represents the ultimate all-knowing advisor, that's the name that you give to that characteristic of spirit. Now, there are clear roles and responsibilities that you both will follow. Your job is to figure out what it is that you want and describe it with gratitude as though you've already achieved it. Spirit's job, or your CSO's job, is to actually create the path for you to get to your goal and give you one step to take at a time along that path that it creates for you to get to your goal. You can either take the step as led, or if you're, you know, confused or unsure or scared or worried, then you just simply ask for another lead. And it goes like this: CSO, I don't know if this message is from you. I need another lead. It's really that simple. You'll eventually get another lead. And what happens in society most often is exactly what Albert Einstein predicted. And he said that we all have this intuitive gift. We all have the ability to tap into this infinite intelligence. And we also have a rational mind, which really is a faithful servant. It does what we tell it to do. But somehow our society has been created such that we honor this rational mind more than the intuitive mind. And what ends up happening is when we get an intuitive message from spirit to tell us to take a step towards our goals, if it doesn't make sense, our rational mind jumps in and starts to try and talk us out of it. And I have a perfect example of that. I, I travel an awful lot, and in my last company, I was traveling about over 150,000 miles a year. And I have it down. I land at the airport, get my rent-a-car, go to my hotel, drop off my bags, and then I go to the closest grocery store to go and buy my water and supplies that I need for my stay. Well, I was in Cleveland and did that drill and got in the car to go to the grocery store, and I had this very, very strong thought. It seemed to come from, you know, just somewhere out of the blue. And the thought was to drive to this grocery store that's 15 minutes away. Well, my goal, one of my goals up to that point had been to have a minimum of $400,000 in new revenue to our company in a particular period of time. So I'm sitting there, and I get this intuitive hit, this thought, to drive to a different grocery store. Well, immediately my rational mind starts kicking in, and it says, May. It's 9 o'clock at night. You don't want to be driving an extra 20 minutes out of your way to go to a grocery store when there's one that's perfectly fine 5 minutes away. May, it doesn't make sense. You have an appointment tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, which is really 5 o'clock in the morning Seattle time. So my rational mind is trying to talk me out of it. So I stomped my foot on the floor of the car, and I said, stop. CSO, if this is from you, if this lead is from you, give me another sign. Well, simply the fact that I said stop and I asked for another lead helped my intuitive mind to start kicking in. So my intuitive mind said, well, you know, it's only an extra 20 minutes out of your way. You know, you'll probably be up that long anyway. And who knows, maybe the water and supplies that you want will be on sale. It's really not going to be that far out of your way. It's okay. Go ahead and make the drive. You have nothing to lose. So I made the drive. I parked the car. I'm walking into the grocery store, and who should be walking out at exactly the same time but a guy who I had met 6 months before at a trade show who was a great potential customer. But he wasn't returning any of my phone calls to have an appointment while I was in Cleveland. So he's there. We strike up this conversation, and while we're talking, he says, why don't you, you know, set aside some time and come over and make a presentation to our group? I did that. I made another presentation, and within a very short period of time, we had a contract signed for over $500,000 worth of business. So that's what the CSO does, is it creates the path. I would have never said, okay, here's my goal, $400,000 of business. I think I'll land in Cleveland and drive to a grocery store. I mean, I would have never thought of that. But the CSO did. And gave me the instructions to take that drive, and sure enough, I was able to run into a person. That's the thing I love most about this practice, is when you achieve a goal, turn around and look at the path that you were led on. And
that's right.
You'll shake your head. It's miraculous.
And it can seem like a tortured path when you look in retrospect, but all of those steps were necessary, or you never would have gotten to the finish line.
Exactly. It ends up being a game.
It also seems, well, more than seems, I think you say in the book, you know, that you are clear about what it is that you want, but you can't micromanage how it's to come about, because as you just said, you couldn't possibly have figured out all those steps. And so your job is to figure out what you want, but the CSO's job is to figure out how to get you what you want. You're not being denied anything. It just has to take a certain path to get there, right?
Right. And the CSO's path is always going to be better. And it ends up being so much more fun. And if we describe our goals with gratitude as though we've already achieved them, we also get an added benefit, and that is that our subconscious is going to kick in and try and help us to notice more possibilities to make those statements true. So you've got the CSO through intuition and your subconscious trying to help you notice anything that will help you to make those goal attainment statements true.
You know, May, in reading your book, Gary and I really appreciated how it is that you went about it, how you laid out the steps. These steps are simple. They're not complicated. It's not a lot of quantum physics. It is laid out in a beautiful fashion that any person can follow. And where I find the problem is that things that are often simple and direct are not always easy. And in one part of the book, on page 99, you say, take great care to choose the speech, thoughts, and emotions that are consistent with the life you want. This is sometimes easier to say than do, especially since many of us have been trained to focus on the problem in an attempt to fix it. And what I see as the biggest challenge to anybody succeeding in the way that you have is that they want to not only say what it is they want, but they want to say exactly how it should come about. And they look at the problem as a problem to be fixed. It is very difficult to turn away from a problem, to be concentrating all your energy on the solution. And don't you find that's where so many people get stuck with this?
Oh, definitely. That's one of the places that they get stuck, is they want very, very much to create the path. I mean, we're trained in Business 101 to create a goal and then break it down into steps to take to get to your goal. And this is a very, very different idea, that you are leaving the path, the creation of the how, up to an unseen partner. And what I ask people to do is think about it this way. If you think of the most famous and successful person you can, and here in Seattle we have somebody named Bill Gates, who topped Forbes list again for the wealthiest man in the world. And I ask people, I say, look, if Bill Gates called you up and said, I'll meet with you every single day and you tell me all your goals, you just, you know, set aside 30 minutes every morning and I'll meet with you, and then I'll give you some advice to take steps along a path that I think of in order for you to achieve your goals, and chances are you'll achieve your goals or something better every single time. Would you agree to meet with Bill Gates every single morning for 25 to 30 minutes? And I always get a resounding yes, of course I will. I mean, Bill Gates is super successful and famous. Of course, he probably will have insight that I don't have. And that's what I ask people to do in the book, is to meet with someone that is even more powerful, who has even more experience, even more intelligence, who's the creator of all that ever was, is, and will be, who can easily guide you and direct you towards achieving your goals if you'd like. But you just have to give up creating the how. Just follow advice. And so in this practice of meeting with this all-knowing, intelligent partner every single day, what ends up happening is you start to recognize how that partner works with you. And you'll see demonstrations that come up, and you'll have to ask for confirming leads less and less often, because you'll know how that partner starts to communicate with you. And but the understanding will follow if people just do the practice every day. If they just do it every day, understanding will show up and confirm for them that this works.
It's time to take another break. You just snap that off at the right moment, May. You've got a future in radio. Ha! She doesn't work for that low wage. She's big time. And if you want to know why, you want to know how, just read her book, The Path to Wealth, 7 Spiritual Steps for Financial Abundance. And just be aware that it's really true, as May says, you cannot outgive God, nor spirit, nor the universe, however you look at the highest possible power. Just try sometime. The Path to Wealth. We're going to stay on it for another segment. Stick with us on Manson Mitchell. You are listening to Seattle's home of alternative talk, AM 1150.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.
Are you looking for an affordable and effective way to market your holistic business? By advertising in Seattle Natural Awakenings magazine, in print and online, you will reach a readership of 50,000 ideal customers. And like no other magazine, we also have creative tools to deliver your message to the world. Join the Seattle Natural Awakenings family and let us support you in bringing your business to the next level. To get into our next issue, call 425-350-5448 or visit us online at seattleawakenings.com. We are ready to go to work with you and for you.
Dad, if you're not going to listen to me, who will we listen to?
Can we just enjoy the drive?
Jeffrey.
Marcia Gay Harden, how did you get in here?
You're getting older.
Not that old.
Your brain's changing, but there are things you can do to make the most of it as you age.
Really?
So, you'll talk to her about this, but not me. Marcia Gay Harden? Where did she go?
Learn how to help reduce some risks to your brain at brainhealth.gov.
Feed your mind and your body and spirit will follow. Alternative Talk, 1150.
The following audio is via a Skype call.
Welcome back to Manson Mitchell and our guest, Mae McCarthy, author of The Path to Wealth, Seven Spiritual Steps for Financial Abundance. One of the things that we wanted to talk about in this last segment here, Mae, was, you know, when you are meeting with your chief spiritual officer, when you are looking at your goals, you want to be specific enough without telling the CSO how you want everything to come about. You need to be open to that. But how you word your goals is actually a very important point in your book, and I wanted you to say a little bit about that.
It's important. You know, we've all been trained so much in the use of our words to actually work against us without even realizing it. I have a number of people who will say things like, I want to lose 10 pounds, or I want to get out of debt. Well, what happens when you say statements like that as a goal? Your subconscious and intuition are going to try and help you make those statements true. So let's just analyze losing 10 pounds. I want to lose 10 pounds. So the goal is that you're wanting to lose 10 pounds. Well, in order to make that statement true, to be wanting to lose 10 pounds, you always have to be 10 pounds overweight. So you're actually working against what you actually want, which is to be in a physically fit and trim body. So a better goal attainment statement would be to say, I'm so grateful that I am now physically fit and trim, toned, energetic, in a healthy, strong body that is pain-free and easily able to hike and walk with my family and friends, and we have a great time. So now your subconscious and your CSO, through intuition and through other people, are going to really step it up to show you more possibilities to make those statements true. And the same would be if you want to get out of debt or you want to. I have one student who her goal was that she's able to go to the family reunion and that Uncle Bob doesn't continue to be a pain and a problem for everyone. Well, think about that. To want Uncle Bob not to be a pain and a problem, she's going to start to see more and more evidence that Uncle Bob's a pain and a problem. So a better goal attainment statement would be, I'm so grateful that I go to the family reunion and have a great time. All of us are operating in the most wonderful and harmonious relationship. So what she will probably notice while she's at the family reunion is harmonious relationship. Now, it could be that the CSO sets it up so that as she's leaving one room, Bob is entering. She may not even notice that Uncle Bob is still a problem because her goal is to have a wonderful time at the family reunion and this experience of harmonious relationships. And that's what she'll experience.
In your book, you also talk about things, beliefs that are hidden from you. So in your speaking, in your speech, there are ways of speaking which you may not be aware of that are subtle. And actually may, that's a really good reason why people should read your book, The Path to Wealth, because they will find how to word things in a way for their success and not be working against themselves. And I wanted to tell you one of the big moments for me. I mentioned early on that I had actually started working the 7 steps myself for the last week or so. And one of the things that I discovered was a hidden belief. This was, for me, the golden nugget of this book, for me personally, because toward the end of the book, you talk about a hidden belief, and you said you might have a belief in incompletion, a hidden belief, leaving things unfinished. If your habit is to start things but not complete them, you may be unconsciously expecting the same to happen when you start on any new goal for the good that you want. As an Aries who loves to start things, I start things and I start things. And one side of the coin is that I'm never bored because I always have so many things that I want to do. I have so many projects in my mind. I have so many projects started. I enjoy so many things that I can never relate to somebody who says, I'm so bored, I have nothing to do. And I look at them like they're from another planet because I always have things I want to do. But I realized in reading your book that I had a belief in incompletion. I had a belief in not completing things. I start a lot of things, but getting them finished is a challenge because I just feel like there's just so much out there and so much interesting, and I'm kind of on to the next thing and the next thing. And I want to tell you, in week one of working the 7 steps, I had my to-do list, but what I found was I was completing things and completing things and completing things because that's what I started putting into my gratitude letter to my chief spiritual officer, was how easily and effortlessly I complete things. And so thank you for that, because I didn't even know that I had that belief until I read it in your book. And you talk about a lot of other hidden beliefs that people have. You can't see the forest for the trees until somebody points them out to you.
Yeah, you know, we all have developed habits, and many of them we don't even recognize. But congratulations on completing things. I love hearing that. I have a strong belief in one of our founder of our Center for Spiritual Living is Ernest Holmes. And he had a great quote. He said that life is a mirror, and it will always reflect back to the thinker what the thinker thinks into it. And so when we are demonstrating incomplete behavior, then the universe reflects back to us incomplete delivery of our goal. So that's actually a very, very wonderful belief to uncover, and relatively easy to fix, because anytime you're aware of what you're doing, you have an opportunity to correct it. And I have a friend of mine who used to use a term that his grandfather and his father used to use all the time, and it was when they were surprised or found something interesting, they would say the phrase, I'll be damned. I'll be damned.
Not a good thing to say to yourself.
No, and his life was one of being damned, and he didn't know why. And he came to one of our workshops, which if any of your listeners would like to go to workshops, they're all listed on our website on the events page, and that's maymccarthy.com. But he came to one of the workshops, and he had a similar aha moment. And he looked at that and thought, oh my gosh, I've been working against myself. such a long time using this phrase that I just picked up because it was a family phrase. So yeah, there are a lot of beliefs that are hidden that we can uncover, and you know, just by being aware of them, we can uncover them and eliminate them from our lives.
May, this is our opportunity, because the minutes are growing short here, and Suzanne is nodding affirmatively. Please tell our listeners where they can get a hold of you. You mentioned maymccarthy.com, but there must be a slew of places where you can be encountered online as well as in person beyond reading your book.
Absolutely. So if you go to the website maymccarthy.com, that's maymccarthy.com, that'll take you to a website that has lots of different pages. And also Facebook connections, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+. And we have events going coast to coast scheduled now through next May. We'll be in the Seattle area on the 29th, as well as right after the first of the year. And, you know, Hawaii and the East Coast and all over the place. And you can find all of that on the events tab. The books are available at all online retailers and some different bookstores, and they're easy to get. So be happy to share more information if they just contact me through the website.
I think that would be great, May. As a matter of fact, Suzanne and I live a mile away from CSL Sarasota. We could walk there if we had to. I'm going to make sure that your book is on their book table, because they do have a small library there. The congregation is nothing the size of what you and I are used to in Seattle. Nevertheless, we do have our wealth-oriented Sarasotans who understand the meaning of the science of mind and the legacy of Ernest Holmes, and what has found its way into the pages of your beautiful book, The Path to Wealth, Seven Spiritual Steps for Financial Abundance. I think it's going to be a great read for anybody who takes their own prosperity and the prospects thereof seriously, no matter where you're from. We're down to just a couple of minutes here, May, but I did want to reflect on something you said early on. You said that this company is quite inclusive. You have people from various spiritual and ethnic backgrounds. What that tells me, May, is that money is attracted to whomever welcomes it. Money doesn't say to anybody, oh, you're from the wrong side of the tracks, I don't want to spend any time in your pocket. Money goes where it's welcome and where it's honored, no matter where you come from.
Absolutely. In fact, the title of the book is The Path to Wealth, and it talks about financial abundance. But my definition of wealth is being whole and complete, satisfied, and provided for in every area of your life. So it's not just money, but it's relationships, health, using your remarkable skills and talents in fulfilling and satisfying ways, doing work that you love. It's so much more than just money. And all of these are simply expressions of spirit operating in and through you. So it's available to everyone, as long as we tune in correctly to being able to partner with the source of all of that, so that it can flow in and through us, you know, in remarkable ways. So, this is available to everyone. It's not something that's reserved for a few. It just requires a little bit of discipline, a little daily, easy practice, and they'll be able to see more and more of what they want being realized in their lives.
You know, May, you said earlier 25 to 30 minutes, and I just want to confirm that you are not really looking for a huge time commitment. I know people who will pray or meditate for 15 to 30 minutes a day, sometimes longer, but this is 30 minutes, very, very well spent following the recipe, following the steps, just doing the steps, which are simple, and it doesn't mean easy. You will be challenged in your thinking. You will uncover thinking that you have that doesn't serve you, but it is not cumbersome at all. It is very doable to follow these seven steps to get what you want. So thank you for writing such an accessible book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
It's great to be clear about prosperity rather than having to reference some arcane system that most people will not begin to grapple with anyway.
Right. And, you know, it can be daunting, especially if some of your beliefs have been created, you know, throughout the generations. I have some people who, you know, have been told that, you know, their grandparents, their parents, their brothers and sisters, you know, that they are predisposed to having diabetes. And one of the things that they need to recognize is that they can deny that and say, no, my family history does not determine whether or not I have a healthy life. I now have a perfectly healthy life where every cell in my body is working exactly as it was designed, and I am easily able to move through life in a pain-free, strong, healthy body. So you can change. You don't have to believe these lies.
That's right. You do not have to believe the lies. Believe the truth, and you'll find a lot of it in The Path to Wealth, Seven Spiritual Steps for Financial Abundance. Thank you, Mae McCarthy.